You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and informative daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and renewable markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the energy landscape.
Monday, January 10th, 2022. Try Just a Little Bit Harder, Part 3. Are green and blue ammonia the shipping fuels of the future? Published by Housley Carr. The international shipping industry's push to significantly reduce its carbon footprint over the next three decades is raising an obvious question: is there a zero or low carbon bunker fuel that meets all of the industry's basic criteria, things like availability, safety, and relative economy, not to mention sufficient onboard energy to transport massive, city block-sized vessels thousands of miles at a clip? There is no clear answer yet, but there is a lot of talk about ammonia, more specifically ammonia produced in a way that either generates no carbon dioxide, or CO2, or that captures and sequesters much of the CO2 that is generated during production. But several major challenges must be met before green and blue ammonia can lay claim to even a small slice of the bunkers market, as we discuss in today's RBN blog. This is the third blog in our series on efforts to reduce emissions of CO2 and other greenhouse gases, or GHG, in the shipping industry, which accounts for about 3% of global GHG emissions. In Part 1, we looked at the push by leading international shipping associations and many large shipowners, particularly the large container operators, to have the International Maritime Organization, IMO, ratchet up the industry's decarbonization goals. In effect, shipowners, themselves under pressure from their large, ESG-minded customers, shareholders, and lenders, are telling the IMO that its goals of reducing global shipping's carbon intensity, or CI, by 40% from its 2008 level by 2030 and total GHG emissions by 50% by 2050 are too timid. They want the IMO to set a more aggressive CI reduction target for 2030 as well as a goal of eliminating or fully offsetting GHG emissions by mid-century. In Part 2, we discuss the fact that new container ships, bulk carriers, and tankers are major, long-term investments, expected life of 20 to 25 years, and that shipowners only want to commit to building new vessels if they know that their propulsion systems and fuel tanks make sense in the long run. While power plants can be retrofitted, it's better to do correctly when building new. With that in mind, we looked at the prospects for LNG as a lower carbon shipping fuel for the near/medium term, and the potential for some of that to eventually be supplanted by zero carbon bio-LNG, aka biomethane, and synthetic LNG. Very small volumes of bio-LNG and synthetic LNG are already being used. There is at least some concern, however, that use of LNG of any type for as bunker fuel may result in small amounts of methane, or CH4, a potent GHG, to be released into the atmosphere during its production, transportation, and injection into an engine. This is because methane has a GHG impact roughly 75 times that of CO2. Another bunker alternative, and the focus of today's blog, is green and blue ammonia. As we'll get to, there's a lot to like about these enviro-friendly ammonia variants, but there's also a series of major hurdles they'll need to clear before they can be declared the next big thing in shipping fuels. It also has to be said, though, that there's a lot of interest in green and blue ammonia in the shipping industry, and plans for a number of ammonia-powered vessels are in the works. In other words, don't rule ammonia out. First, a few definitions. The process for producing green ammonia begins by using electricity from renewable sources such as wind and solar to electrolyze water, yielding hydrogen, or H2, and oxygen, or O2, and to separate air into nitrogen, or N2, and O2. Then, the resulting hydrogen is reacted with the nitrogen using the Haber-Bosch process, a catalyst, high temperatures, and high pressure, to produce ammonia, or NH3. As for blue ammonia, it's produced by reacting blue hydrogen with nitrogen. As we discussed in HELP Part 2, Entangled Up in Blue, blue hydrogen comes from running old-fashioned natural gas through a steam methane reformer, or SMR, or an autothermal reformer, or ATR, to produce hydrogen and CO2, the latter of which is then partially captured and sequestered. SMR typically allows the capture of about 50% of the CO2, while ATR can capture up to 95%. The blue hydrogen is reacted with nitrogen from an air separation unit to produce blue ammonia. We should emphasize here that blue ammonia is a low-carbon product, not a zero-carbon one like green hydrogen, because at least some of the CO2 generated during blue ammonia's production is released into the atmosphere. But blue ammonia could be alchemized to net zero from a CO2 perspective through the purchase of carbon offsets. Welcome to the complicated world of energy transition. Whether green or blue, the ammonia serves as an efficient carrier of hydrogen and offers a number of benefits as a ship engine fuel, the most obvious being that when ammonia is combusted, it generates no CO2. Also, ammonia is less flammable than hydrogen and has a considerably higher energy density. Its refrigerated tanks would take up only half the space of cryogenic hydrogen tanks. There are challenges too, including ammonia's toxicity, its corrosiveness, and the fact that ammonia is difficult to ignite, doesn't sustain combustion well, and, when burned at high temperatures, produces nitrogen dioxide, NO2, which contributes to smog and acid rain, and small amounts of nitrous oxide, aka N2O, or laughing gas, which is a potent GHG. And there's this too, no small matter, ammonia-fueled engines still need to be developed, as do ammonia-fueled vessels. We'll take these challenges, and their prospective fixes or workarounds, one by one. Toxicity. Put bluntly, in concentrated form, ammonia can be a killer. But it's also true that ammonia, a primary ingredient in fertilizer, is shipped all around the world, and the folks who do the shipping know what it takes to keep things safe. If ammonia is to be used as a bunker fuel, that would likely mean extra careful handling, extra ventilation, and, for ammonia fuel engines, double-walled fuel pipes to prevent it from escaping if any inner pipe springs a leak or ruptures. As for the issues posed by igniting ammonia in an engine, our understanding is that they could be addressed by combining ammonia with a better-burning liquid pilot fuel, maybe liquid hydrogen, though that would require adding small hydrogen tanks or equipment to crack ammonia to produce hydrogen, or diesel, though that would increase the fuel system's CO2 emissions. And how would we deal with NO2 and N2O pollution? Special equipment such as catalytic converters would probably do the trick. Using ammonia or hydrogen in fuel cells is another possibility, but probably only for small vessels or in a supporting role, at least for now. All this really leads us to engine and vessel design, and beyond that, the need for exponential growth in green and blue ammonia production if use of ammonia as a fuel is to flourish. As we said earlier, there's considerable interest in ammonia as a bunker fuel, and a number of companies are making upfront investments that suggest it could gain at least a foothold in global shipping in the mid-2020s and make further inroads by 2030. Here are a few examples. Number 1. Wärtsilä Marine Power and South Korean shipbuilder Samsung Heavy Industries in September 2021 announced an agreement aimed at jointly developing ammonia-fueled vessels with four-stroke auxiliary engines. Wärtsilä has already successfully tested an engine with a fuel mix containing 70% ammonia and in 2023 expects to have an engine concept capable of operating with 100% ammonia. Samsung has indicated that initial new build targets for ships using ammonia fuel would be container vessels and very large crude carriers, or VLCCs. Number 2. MAN Energy Solutions has indicated that it too is working on a four-stroke engine that could be fueled by ammonia and other alternative bunkers. MAN also aims to have a commercially available two-stroke ammonia engine as soon as 2024, and is working on a retrofit ammonia fueling package for the rebuild of existing vessels that would be available soon thereafter. Number 3. Veritas Bulk Carriers, a joint venture of Navigare Logistics, Amman Maritime, and Movold's Reederi, is planning to develop a fleet of ammonia-fueled bulk carriers for the so-called short-sea bulk market in Europe. Veritas has suggested that it plans to place its first ship orders in 2022, with delivery of the ships to start in 2024 to 2025. Number 4. A number of ship owners have been placing orders for various types of vessels that would be ammonia-ready, that is, designed to accommodate the tanks and engines required for ammonia fueling without structural changes to the ships. For example, Greek shipowner Avin International has ordered, and China's New Time shipbuilding company is already building, a Suezmax tanker that initially will be conventionally fueled but will be capable of switching to ammonia fueling when that becomes practical. Also, Singapore-based Asiatic Lloyd, part of the Asiatic Atlantic Lloyd group of companies, has reportedly placed orders for 4,7,100 TEU, 20-foot equivalent unit, container ships that will be ammonia-ready too. One 20-foot-long container equals one TEU, and in October 2021, Huig Autoliner said it has signed a letter of intent with China Merchants Heavy Industry to build an unspecified number of ammonia-ready roll-on/roll-off, or ro-ro, car carriers, each capable of transporting up to 9,100 vehicles. The first ro-ros will be delivered in the second half of 2024. Other ammonia-fueled and ammonia-ready vessels are in the works as well, as are plans for ammonia bunkering infrastructure. All good news for ammonia as shipping fuel advocates. But like a lot of what's going on in the energy transition space, there's a chicken or egg dilemma associated with the effort to decarbonize global shipping by using green or blue ammonia. Yes, there is hope and there are plans, but there's also the lingering question of how quickly the production of ammonia can ramp up to support the potential demand for the fuel. That's a critically important topic that we'll continue to follow, both in our blogs and in our weekly Hydrogen Billboard report. In the next blog in this series, we'll look at a few other possible zero and low carbon bunker fuels. Try Just a Little Bit Harder was written by Jerry Ragavoy and Chip Taylor. The song appears as the first cut on side one of Janis Joplin's debut solo album, I Got Them Old Cosmic Blues Again, Mama. The tune was first recorded by soul artist Lorraine Ellison and appeared on her 1966 album, Stay With Me. Try was released as a single by Joplin, backed with One Good Man in early 1970, but failed to make the Billboard charts. Personnel on the record were Janis Joplin on lead vocals and acoustic guitar, Sam Andrews on electric guitar and backing vocals, Brad Campbell on bass, Richard Kermode and Gabriel McClure on keyboards, Maury Baker and Lonnie Castile on drums, Terry Clements on tenor sax, Snooky Flowers on baritone sax and backing vocals, and Luis Gasca on trumpet. I Got Them Old Cosmic Blues Again, Mama was recorded at Columbia Records Studios in New York City in June 1969. Produced by Gabriel McClure, the album was released in September 1969. It went to number 5 on the Billboard Top 200 Albums chart and has been certified platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America. It was the first album Joplin recorded after leaving her band Big Brother and The Holding Company, and would be the only solo LP released during her lifetime. Three singles were released from the LP. Janis Joplin was an American singer and songwriter. Joplin got her first professional big break after appearing with Big Brother and The Holding Company at the Monterey Pop Festival in 1967. She released 4 studio albums, 7 live albums, 14 compilation albums, and 13 singles. She has a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award and is a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Joplin died in October 1970 at the age of 27.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.